I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, episode 101. Next up, the final home game for this senior group against the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure, a 2 o'clock start, part of a William Smith Hobart doubleheader. That came on 89.5 WEOS Saturday, joined by the head coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Hello, brother. How are you?
Good. We're going to talk a little bit about this game, and then we're just going to try to move on and be positive and look at these final two. The first thing I want to talk about with St. Joe's, the 10-man ride. I mean, it was just brutal. What were you trying to do against it, and where did it go wrong?
I think that's a kind of a great example of, you know, who this team's been throughout the course of the week, Monday to Friday, and who we are in the face of some pressure on Saturdays, Ted. So with a ride like that, you have to move the ball and you have to shift the side of the field that you're on. And so what we did all week, and I can promise you, we practiced it tirelessly, and our scout group did a phenomenal job doing their best to duplicate that ride. I think when you add a couple of those big, long, fast defensemen that St. Joe's has in the middle of the field, it really starts to cloud up some decision-making. But what we attempted to do is basically get the ball to certain spots on the field where we felt like the ride was weak, be able to draw some great pressure, and then have enough fortitude to kick the ball and reverse it to an opposite side of the field. So, I felt like to start, the execution was great, and we did a really good job breaking that thing and even creating some transition off of it. You know, it's part of the transition game we wanted to exemplify in that game, was how we could get behind the ride and score. But a lot of things easier said than done. I felt like as the game went on, with more to deal with and more to think about, you know, our guys had gotten to a position where they may have forgot a little bit about the ways to attack a ride like that and how it doesn't go away. I mean, it's something they do every time, and you either break it or you don't. And, I thought as the game went on and we felt the score deficit becoming a little bit more distracting, that the main game plan, which was clearing the ball on first tries, it really took a bit of a hit. But kudos to St. Joe's. You know, the best riding team in the country for a reason, and it certainly showed against us as well.
One of the things you did with success early on with the shot clock running out was you just sent a man, you sent Cano down to the end line and just had Nolan Firth fire one at the goal, and then that counts as a shot and you get back up. Is that something that you could do consistently, or is there a risk that the referees don't rule that a shot at some point?
Whether how they rule it a shot, Ted, and who they say is closest to the ball. Because if the refs are in position on that shot, they're not on the end line. They don't see. They have to sprint from the midfield to the goal line extended to see who's closer to that shot. And so there were two other shots that they gave to St. Joe, and they said that they were a little bit closer. So that is a risk. And you know, ultimately the look ends up being, you know, opposite of where the ball is in the far corner as they shift into the goal. So, you know, we shot it a few times and the goalie caught it. We shot it a few times and the ref said they were closer to the ball on the end line. So you got to pick and choose a little bit. You know, what you hope for is quick stops, quick up and outs where they can't set up in that ride. And, you know, again, we offered that as an option to our men, especially late in the clearing clock. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
I've made this comparison in basketball that with pressing teams, sometimes it's not necessarily forcing the turnover on the press, but you make the offense expend so much energy getting the ball across half court that it's hard in the half, in this case, half field game. And it's kind of the same thing here. Even when you were able to clear, they're just so good defensively that they just get you out of sync.
Yeah, good and also just long. You know, I think, Ted, their ability to play gaps and, you know, the actual physical presence of a 6'7" guy who's got the wingspan, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, is, you know, in the middle of the defense. So, you know, they can make up for a lot of what you would indicate as maybe, you know, being slightly tired or, you know, just with, you know, being a presence from a gap perspective defensively. But I look at it like this, Ted. We have to clear the ball against the ride, and they have to ride when they're doing a 10-man. So they're running just as much as we are. And, you know, we offer that analogy to our men constantly in a clear and a ride scenario. It, you know, who's got more in the tank? Who can who can run with the ball effectively, handle some pressure. Every time we get a stop, we have to clear it. And every time they play offense, they have to ride. So, it's not like they're doing less prior to those plays or we're doing more. It's the same players on the same field that seem to be executing better after that transition phase than the other. So, it's just about whether or not our guys can muster up that kind of that mental toughness to be in a position to make good plays.
It was an odd game in so many ways. I mean, you look at numbers, they made three saves in that game. When's the last time a team won a game with three saves? It was an odd game in many ways.
Odd game, yeah. And the way that the half ended was detrimental to the start of the second half. We still feel, Ted, that these first quarter woes are highly impactful to the remainder of the game. We seem to spot these good teams, or the just in these last two games, or sorry, these last three games, seem to spot these teams 4 or 5 goals. Where, if you're going into halftime, Ted, and we told the team, if we're down, if that quarter, that first quarter is, I mean, it sounds like a defeatist attitude, but it's just logical. If it's 3-0, if it's 4-1, if it's, 3-2, whatever that is, the momentum that that carries into the second quarter is, I think, monumental for us anyway. So, and then if you go into the half with all things the same, if they're not up 5 after 15 minutes and they're up 5 after 30, that is far different than 8 after 30, So just that difference in that 5-goal swing is something that we have to impact in our next challenge. And if we don't, we'll be in a similar position where we're digging our way out. And I think guys start to play in a different decision-making platform when that's the case. So we've got to start the game better. I think that is the biggest impact we need to make on the next opportunity.
You mentioned the end of the half. What was that call? There was a penalty for delay of game at the end of the half that gave them a man up and a quick goal to begin the third. What was that all about?
I think unnecessary officiating, but that's being on the other end of those calls. I mean, there's a second left on the clock. You don't really need to call a push or a hold on a face-off. You can let the face-off go. And with a second left in play, we've got to be smarter and give a guy 5 yards. Technically you need 5 yards and you can't impact the player with the ball on that dead ball scenario. But in all likelihood, with a second left, you can keep your flag in your pocket. You can let the play go and let the time run out. And, that's just, again, one person's point of view. But those refs saw something different. I had a lot to say to them at halftime, just so they knew where we stood on that whole call and that whole process. But, I can't go into outcomes or scenarios of a game and blame the refs. That would make me a faulty leader.
Well, I did that a couple of times for you during the game. A couple of those backup calls were just way out there. But you mentioned the size advantage of St. Joe's, especially in defense. And a couple of fans even messaged us during the game that were watching saying, wow, how big those guys are. Is that going to be a recruiting priority of yours going forward to get bigger and beefier, especially on D?
Yeah, we have. I mean, we have those guys coming in. It's important for the Hobart faithful to recognize what situation we're in and how scholarships to an entire roster, not just. I mean, we're dealing with a class and a half of those guys right now. So, the recruiting landscape has changed so dramatically. I mean, we'll get as many big, fast guys as we could possibly get. That's certainly a priority for us. Whether or not they come here is a different story altogether. But I think as we start to add more elements to what our recruiting can be, meaning incentful additions to the cost of tuition or incentful additions to awarding academic merit and all those things. So the unfortunate business side of this thing is impacting this program slowly. It's we have to find or have to keep pushing forward in a scenario where we know that a roster full of scholarship athletes will be much different than a class and a half of scholarship athletes. That's something that we're very proud that this institution has supported us completely in this change. It is still slightly new for us, and we're navigating some ways that these scholarships impact the recruiting. So, but we're very happy with the class that's coming in next year, and I've already done great work on the class after that. So, we're very optimistic at this cupboard being full or more full as these classes come in.
One last thing on St. Joe's before we move forward, and that's Ellis Wilson in goal in the second half. Wow, 7 of 8, and he was flying around the field, seeing the ball well, and looking like a championship goalie.
Yeah, and he's shown great prowess in those moments, and I think we have full support of Jack and understand that there's good games, there's bad games, there's places where if you're looking a little deeper into Ellis, there's games that he struggled quite a bit, but we're in a position now where we have to look at all things and see who can impact it, the winning outcome better. If there's guys on this bench that can do that, we're taking an extremely hard look at it, having a lot of difficult conversations, and we'll make the best decision within the pipes and all over the field that we feel gives us the best advantage going forward. But proud of Ellis, I always am, and I think just in that scenario, you see what kind of person he is, and he doesn't go in and save the ball or play based on the score. He does just what he's supposed to do in a tough scenario. So that just marks the tough competitor that he is.
Before we talk about senior day and the senior class, what's the message now to your team going forward? You got 2 games left, and if you win them both, there's still a pretty good chance that you get in. If Richmond takes care of UMass this weekend and you beat the Monies and UMass, you're probably in. So how do you wipe the slate clean and focus hard on these last two?
I think Ted, we have to limit our men from playing based on what the postseason can look like. We don't have that type of mental and emotional depth. We just don't. I wish we could put ourselves in a scenario of what ifs, and if you do these things, this will happen. If you don't, this will happen. But we have to shrink down the focus to playing a better 60-minute game, or the postseason won't matter. We'll go in and we'll do the same things early, spot a good team 5 goals, and be digging our way out of whatever that scenario is. Now, with that said, we have full force and optimistic perspective on what winning these 2 games can do. But we have structured practice much differently this week so that we can play well on Saturday. And all of the scenarios that would be beneficial for a long and trying season's outcome, are deep in the thought process of this coaching staff. But we really do need a different balance on the field, a different perspective on the field in order to get to that scenario. So this Saturday is all about honoring the seniors the right way, making sure everybody is in a position where they can play a better brand of lacrosse, some guys in some different spots again, continuing to mold and shake and move with this group. And we keep telling, or I keep telling our coaching staff, or we keep looking at this thing as, we have to coach this team as it is. We can't coach this team for what we hope or want them to be. We have to coach them in this moment and how they're feeling right this second. And so in that sense, they are in a position where they need to have our trust, they need to have our confidence, and they need to exude the same qualities in their teammates and themselves. So while the postseason is still a possibility for us, I'm much more focused as the head coach on making sure Saturday goes well.
It's senior day again. It's a 2 o'clock start. The Herons play at 11 and Hobart and St. Bonaventure at 2. Tell us about this senior group. They came in we were still kind of in the tail end of pandemic mode. They played for a league championship in 2022 and obviously haven't done what they've wanted or what you've wanted to in these last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, but think about the transitions they've been a part of, Ted. It's, half of this class is a COVID class. We recruited, sorry, three quarters of this class is guys that we recruited on film, guys that were stuck in their houses, guys that lost their senior seasons or their junior seasons of high school. And, I mean, some of the senior speeches that we've had this year, you forget. They go back to the whatever growth or process brought them to Hobart, and they explain it in some poetic fashions. These guys are outstanding men, and we really believe we've had a great impact on their inability to surrender, their undying loyalty, stuff that is fleeting in the Division I landscape these days. But they've been through a ton, man, and it's been pretty special. Just going from the essentially being at the top of a conference to starting anew with an entirely new roster versus a bunch of turnover in the Atlantic 10, forced into a 5-game schedule instead of an 8-game schedule that is much, much different. The travel's much different. I mean, we've never had to get on a flight before. We've never had to take two buses places and have a 2-day trip, and so all the things that they've endured. Although we would have liked the outcomes to be much better, Ted. I talk a lot about these guys as people on this podcast, and it's what I'm most invested in. But we would have loved to have been in a di loved to be in a different place with this class than we are right now. But with that said, we love these guys and appreciate the plight of what that COVID or pandemic transition did for their college search, and what it's done for their freshman season, their sophomore season, their junior season. It's just this has been a program that is continuing to claw their way out of that pandemic, and they've been a huge, huge part of that. So I can't wait to honor them. I can't wait to hug them all before the game, tell them how proud I am of them, and can't wait to go into battle again on Saturday.
The Bonnies are a team. They remind me of Canisius. They've got the former Canisius coach. Every year we talk about Canisius, you've had success, you've beaten them, but it gets closer and closer. I mean, last year it was a war in the rain. What do you see from the Bonnies on video this year?
I think one, they've got good players, and they've got a good system. I think they know exactly who they are. We've seen them play our opponents pretty similarly to the way that we have. I think they've either started poorly, started fresh, had some successes, had a bunch of failures, whatever it is. I mean, I'm more interested in our guys understanding that they feel like this is their opportunity for their first conference win. And we need our men to adhere to that emotional connection they have to this game and do our best to smash it early. And but Ted, we feel like this is going to be a 60-minute battle. There are no outcomes. Every game's different. They will provide great effort and great confidence in this scenario, and we just know we have to do the same. I think the fortunate part about Bonnies versus Hobart in this specific, like I said, this specific scenario is it doesn't matter who we play. We've got our seniors that we have to honor, and we're in a position where we need to win. So those two ideologies in themselves has to drive our force in how we play this game. The opponent, nameless gray faces, another group that wants to have us feeling lousy after a Saturday 60-minute challenge, and we've got to make sure that we're combating their effort and their focus with a superior one in a Hobart jersey.
In seven of their games this year, neither team has reached 10 goals. Do you expect that kind of grinding, 8-7 kind of game on Saturday?
I mean, I hope not, but
20 to 7 would be nice, but.
I wouldn't be surprised at anything, Ted. I think it's supposed to be pretty rainy, and they have a great knack for making teams play in a little bit of a sloppy fashion, or an offense that can take first shots rather than better ones. And defenses that can get a little bit lazy off ball, and they've got some slick, kind of one-handed sticks that offer some challenges. So, for us, again, if we go into this game, Ted, thinking anything other than we have to play well the entire game and have to be focused the entire game, or more so than we have been up to this point, then we're going to do ourselves a disservice, just because we haven't shown the ability to score tons and tons of goals, right? We haven't shown the ability to stop teams consistently. So that's the next play, the one possession mentality that we have to have is it has got to be ever apparent against this opponent Saturday.
I don't want to give things away, but I did notice last Saturday a couple of guys moving around different parts of the field than we might usually see them and taking some different kind of shots. Have you kind of emphasized that as a way of breaking out of the offensive doldrums?
Yeah, I mean, can't keep doing the same things and expect a different result. That's definition of insanity. And we've done a pretty good job staying sane around here, and it's been trying to for the most part, but also, believe it or not, Ted, enjoyable, because we have a team that always responds. So we keep putting people in some different spots. We'll continue to. We've told them we're going to rely on our experience and the senior group this week, just because that's what they've earned, and I think that's what they want. So we'll move some things around, shuffle some guys here and there, and hopeful that the ball movement and the scoring opportunities can present themselves a little bit more than they have in the past.
Like you said, the last few weeks you've been playing from behind early. Is there anything, I won't ask you to say what, but is there anything you can do in terms of drawing up a play or two or trying to do something so that you're going to be the team ahead 3-0 in the first instead of the other guys?
I mean, yeah, we are. I think we can draw the most perfect play in the world, Ted, if we can't put the ball on our teammate's ear, and handle that ball and make the right decisions with it. It might be all for naught, but for us, we're telling these guys early on in this game, that we have to do our own job much better. We don't need anybody to do anyone else's job in addition to theirs. We need to make it more simple and do things in a fashion that we've seen success with, which is impact the pace, make sure that we have some wisdom in that pace scenario. We've seen where we've struggled in the past. We know where we can be better, and we need our men in these positions to be more fundamentally sound and to be able to handle the ball better, handle the ball smarter, and we'll continue to get their hands free in spots. Coach Brundage is, I'm sure getting some criticism as to what the offense is doing, but I can assure you, he's putting them all in great spots to put the ball in the back of the net. And our guys need to execute slightly better and also make it more simple. So the main message. No great trickery plays or this, that, or whatever. It's how great can you do your job to start this game so that this clean start can catapult us into three more quarters afterwards.
One last thing. You've been very measured and very calm in these conversations throughout this season, but I know how competitive you are, and I know this has got to eat at you at times, and there's got to be times that you go home and want to cry or break things or both. Who do you have to keep you on an even keel?
Who says I haven't cried or broke things? That's the question, Ted. And it's all for them, man. I think I, as a competitor, have won a lot and have been fortunate enough to have an awesome journey through every and all things lacrosse, the things it's provided me and my family, and I'm forever grateful. So my frustrations don't come in the wins and the losses. They come in how I know our men are feeling and what I believe that I just think they've earned more. I think they deserve more on game day. So my support system's outstanding, man. First and foremost, it's Stephen Brundage, Chris Fisher, and Sam Muller, these other coaches that know exactly what we're doing, know exactly where we're coming from, and we always respond very well, spend good time together outside of these offices in that field. I think that's very important. But I mean, my wife is a rock. She is outstanding at one, not talking about it much. She always offers the 7 minutes. When we come home from work, we have this thing where it's like, you want 7 minutes to go and just vent. And sometimes I say yes, and 7 minutes usually equals about 45. But she has to do the same things. I think, her job's frustrating. Ted, your job's frustrating. They're, you know, a true loser is a person that starts to blame other things or other circumstances rather than their own decision making. So we aren't unique or different in the fact that things aren't going the exact way we want them to. We're unique and different in how we handle those adversities and the resilience that we can build and show. So thankfully, the people that I love and care about most, I mean, if you were to ask my kids ask me if we won or not after the game. I mean, they're so busy and crazy all over the place. And the loyalty that they show, I mean, that this is what life's all about. I walk in the door and there's four hugs that are surrounding me, and they're not hugging me because they feel bad or because they're worried about me. They're hugging me because they're happy to see me. And if I have those things, I mean, all else is a wash. We'll figure it out. So don't worry about me, man. I'm motivated, I'm focused, and I'm in the right place because, we've worked very hard as a family to get there.
You've been listening to the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast. You can find this podcast wherever you go to get your podcasts, be it Apple or Google or Spotify, and all your athletics information at hwsathletics.com. So come out for two on Saturday, the Herons at 11 and Hobart and St. Bonaventure at 2. Coach, regardless of what happens these last 2 weeks and standings and everything else, I'm confident we're going to see an effort on Saturday that will make you and the senior class proud, and we're looking forward to it.
I appreciate that, Dad. Thanks, brother.